Now then, I would like to do a little piece of political satire, which I enjoy doing. I call this my Kennedy bit. And it's based on two facts. Fact number one, I have been traveling around the country for the past, 7 months, and I've had an opportunity thereby, through the traveling, to hear very many opinions and attitudes on the past campaign, many of which I thought were hilarious and, you know, should be put together in a bit, should be, and this I've done. Okay, that's fact number one. Fact number two, and this is quite relevant, gang. Fact number two is that I am a Roman Catholic, and that's pretty cool today. Of course, in a few short years, it could be a federal rat, you know. Oh, I can hear the FBI now. Come here, kid. Are these your holy pictures? Yeah, but I wasn't worshiping them in the clink, Johnny. Come on, come on. We'll get you rosary punches with your Latin codes. Really? Now, the scene for this satire is the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles. You remember the convention with all the panoply and all the pandemonium. And the speaker at the Democratic Convention is saying, the chaya, the chaya recognizes the delegate from Moffat, Arkansas, for the purpose of mounting this rostrum and making a nomination for president. Delegate, the rostrum is yours for the mounting. Governor Collins! Governor Collins! Mrs. Roosevelt. Governor Stevenson? And your campaign manager, Mort Saul? Ladies and gentlemen of the Democratic Party, Ian Fellow Martin. I have been living in Moffat, Arkansas for 37 years, and I want to tell you, Governor Orville Favis is a persecuted saint. Poor man can't go to the John unless there's a life photographer picking behind him, picking away at everything he does. I just told you, I have been living in Moffat, Arkansas for 37 years, and I have never seen a burning cross on anybody's lawn. Of course, I have seen whole damn homes go up out there. Now then, I'm going to lay it on you now. I'm going to give it to you now. There is some talk at this convention that a certain junior senator from the sovereign state of Massachusetts is interested in becoming the Democratic nominee for the august office of President of the United States of America. Bullshit! Now, men, if you only make love to your wife more than 7 times a month, you ain't gonna vote for Jack Kennedy. See that Jackie Bouvier on the white half lawn in hard dog paint? Now, I don't want you to think that I'm just one way about this thing. I met Jack Kennedy in the hallway the other day. Jack said to me, Charlie, and that's my name. Said, Charlie, would you mind coming up to my caucus and entertain? Macaucus, that's right. It's a political phenomenon wherein decisions are made at the convention. Get this woman out of the Jersey convention, Harry, she's gonna. He said, would you come up to my caucus and entertain? And I said, yeah, Jack, I wouldn't mind coming up to your caucus. It just so happens that I have my accompanist with me, Miss Margaret Sanger. And ladies and gentlemen of the Democratic Party, I went up to that caucus and I just sang me one little itty bitty tune. I just sang one little itty bitty tune. Well, I sang I Got Rhythm and all them Catholics cut out on. Now, I want to give you the facts. I want to give you the facts so that you will know the facts. And here are the facts. Fact number one. Jack Kennedy has said there will be no unemployment in this country, and you can bet me there ain't gonna be any unemployment, uh-huh. We all gonna be busy digging that tunnel to Rome. Fact number two. He has already had his White House stationery made up. And it's a very simple little affair. It says, from the office of the president, Jack the 24th. Fact number three, and dig this one, gang. If Jack Kennedy is elected, the first man shot into space is going to be Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. And... I've had a lot of success with that bit, particularly in Mississippi. No, really. No, I opened up down there and had a long run. However, I would like to say that I think Mr. Kennedy's victory indicates an awareness on the part of the American electorate that perhaps some of us, or even many of us, were substantially unaware of, and I think that it indicates nothing but good for minorities in this country as well as the rest of the world. Who knows? In 1968 or 1972, we may, you and I, hear a voice say, ladies and gentlemen, the president-elect of the United States of America. Well, we done it! That's a long, hot campaign I retained my constituents to Hadassah. We'll take a 6 or 7 week vacation in Miami Beach. By strange reason, they wouldn't accept the reservations in Palm Beach. But I'll give them my zets and they'll fall in line, you lazy. We'll be moving in the White House sometime in January, after we'll paint. So if you're in the neighborhood, don't be a stranger. Drop in, take a piece of fruit. God love you. Good night. Thank you again. Now, I have to tell you this one. Stop! All right, here we go. I live in Los Angeles. Now, one of the reasons I like Los Angeles is because you have an opportunity to meet, you know, like, lovely guys. And I have to tell you about a friend of mine by the name of Abe Lipsy. Abe is a furrier. He is also a golf nut. He's a member of Hillcrest Country Club. He has played there Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, for the last 15 years, right? Last 15 years, every Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Abe has not won a nickel in 15 years. Hasn't won a nickel. Decides to grab the bull by the horns. Go out and practice at a driving range every night for a month until such time as he becomes a little bit better, he can go back to Hillcrest and beat these guys that are beating him every week, all right? He puts the plan in operation. Shows up at a driving range the first night, lays out $5 for 3 large pails of select. He goes first cabin. He's just about to start practicing when he looks into the stall next to him. And he sees a full-grown male African gorilla with a Jerry Barber glove on, and the gorilla's working it inside out. Ah! 697 yards over the fence, the gorilla's. You never saw a gorilla hit a ball like this in your life, and Abe is looking at him, and his eyes are like this. And he's starting to think, this gorilla is hitting the ball so good that if Abe can make pals with the gorilla, bring him back to Hillcrest on Saturday morning, he's got a partner that he can win some money with, right? So he decides to try and talk to the gorilla. Now, how the hell do you talk to a gorilla? And he goes around to try and talk to the gorilla. Now, dig, the gorilla is practicing, and he doesn't want to be bugged with conversation, right? He... Abe walks around. He's going to talk to the gorilla. Listen, you want to team up with me? Now, Emish, you want to be a partner? The gorilla accepts. Abe says, crazy. The gorilla goes, cool. All right, now he's got the gorilla, right? But he doesn't want to bring him back to Hillcrest the way he looks, so he decides to take him down to Cy DeVore's and get him a little outfit, okay? Now, they've been in business in Cy DeVore's for about 40 years, and it takes an awful lot to shake these guys up. Abe walks in with the gorilla 7 feet tall. He's got his hand on the gorilla's arm, right? Walks right in.
I want to get an outfit for my partner.
Yes, sir, Mr. Lipsy. We'll take him down to the large boys selection, won't you? What would you be interested in getting your partner, Mr. Lipsy?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll get him a little tam and some dark glasses, you know, and a cardigan. Maybe we'll get him some Negev sandals, you know. And I'll see how he looks. Maybe I'll blow a grand on electrolysis. I don't know.
Now he gets the gorilla outfitted, takes the gorilla back to Hillcrest on Saturday morning, walks right in. Abe got Hutzby, walks in with the gorilla, right? Walks right in.
Take my partner's clubs. Come on, sweetie, we're going down.
Now, it's all over the club about Abe and his guest, right? In the card room, they're talking. They're talking about it.
Did you hear about Lips' guest? No, I didn't hear, but... Who's the guest? He's got a girl, huh? What locker to put him in? Oh, they put him in with Jessel. That figures. Did he sell him a bond? No, he didn't sell him a bond. But they're going to go and take a tour of the Holy Land in the spring. Listen, that Jessel's a fast worker. Thanks God I got to him before Spellman. Are you kidding me?
Now, on the first tee, the two guys that are playing with Abe every Saturday, they're waiting for Abe, right? It's 10:30. Saturday's going to be here at 10 o'clock. You want to hang around here all day? You want to get home and watch the Fulton Sheen reruns? Where the hell is it? Abe comes out of the clubhouse with the gorilla. Comes walking out of the with the gorilla, right? Don't step in the flowers, Yachts. Come on, we gotta get ready. The guy on the left spots him. The guy on the left on the first tee spots him.
Morris. Here comes Abe. He's got a gorilla.
Don't notice it. It's a put-on. Don't notice it. How I wouldn't notice a 7-foot gorilla if I could... Be a nectar. Be a nectar.
Here they come. Now look them right in the eye. Well, bitch, the gorilla, or they all shut up. Well, hello, boys. How are you today? How about today? Maybe we'll play a $500 Nassau. What do you think, huh? Well, it's the first time in 15 years you want to play a $500 Nassau, eh? Who's your partner? From the Punima looks a little goyish. What, are you kidding me? He's a neighborhood fella. What is that, a foot on? He's a member of my temple, reformed, but... What's his handicap? What's his handicap? He's overweight and he's got an odor. What the hell do I know what his handicap is? It's an odor, sweetheart, the ape has. You'll find most apes, they got an odor, they couldn't get rid of it. Listen. Well, okay, Abe, we'll play you the $500. Now, with that, the two guys are playing against Teal. The first guy, 260. The second guy, 250. Abe steps up. He hits it about 120. Got a hernia. Can't get into the ball, okay? Now, the gorilla steps up to the first tee. It's a five-par hole, 613 yards long. And the gorilla... And now, dig, the gorilla's got a little acceptance going for him now, and he's like, you know, he's pretty cool, right? Yeah. Gorilla starts to address the ball. Meanwhile, other members, they're walking around the grounds and they're clocking the action on the first tee, right? Would you look what's on the first tee now? Think maybe he's a member? Now, the gorilla steps up to the ball, a five-par hole, 613 yards long, and... knocks the ball right on the green, and Abe is out of his mind. He's deliriously happy. The gorilla knocks the ball right on the green, all right? Now, the two guys, they're playing. They hit their second shots, they're short. They hit their third shots, their wedges, they knock them on the green. They're laying three on the green, and they take two putts each. They have fives. The gorilla is lying one, and Abe can see he's going to win this hole and the next hole and the next hole, and for the first time in 15 years, he's going to win some money. He grabs the gorilla's putter, he says, here you are, buddy, line it up and knock it in. The gorilla takes the putter, and he goes, ah! 700 yards over the clubhouse, he hit the ball. Now, I should tell you right at the top of the show that I am not a sick comic. I have a slight post-nasal drip, and that's about the size of it. The reason I say that is that today in nightclubs, for the most part, you will see young men come out on a nightclub floor apparently for the express purpose of releasing all of their hostilities and anxieties. And believe me, gang, I don't have to come out onto a nightclub floor to release my hostilities and anxieties. I bought a home for that. By the same token, I realize it's not fair of me, you know, to come home to the wife and kids and take out all of my inner tumult upon the wife and kids, and I came up with a very simple solution. Really, a marvelously simple solution. I discovered that if I came home from work and sat down and relaxed, had one or two martinis, you know, and had dinner, say, at 7:30 or 8 o'clock, it relaxed me and I unwound, and I, you know, this is what I started to do. I would come home from work, I'd sit down, I'd have three or four martinis, I'd have dinner, say, at 10 o'clock, and I started to feel like a new man. No. A new man. My friends would meet me in the street and say, Pat, you look great. What have you been doing? I say, look, I found a new way of life. I come home from work. I slip into a bathrobe and slippers. I have six or seven martinis. I watch a little television, maybe the late show, and at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I have dinner, and I say this to anybody in this audience tonight who's got a job that fills you full of frustration and anxieties, take my advice. When you come home from work, have 12 martinis. Don't bother with dinner. It's only going to sober you up. Now, I know what I'm talking about, gang. I get up in the morning and I have 17 straight belts of scotch. I don't wait like I'm home from work. I don't go to work anymore. I don't have a job anymore. But I'll tell you this. It taught me how to relax. You come over to my house any hour of the day or night and you will see me for blunget in the kitchen floor. But relaxed. Talking about relaxing. When I am through here at the Blue Angel, I go down to Miami, and I look forward, believe me, I look forward to going to Miami, as does my wife, Margie. We've gone down there now 3 years in a row. And the reason I do is because Miami, let's face it, truly it is the greatest relaxing town this kind. It's the greatest relaxing town in the world.
Where else in the world except in Miami would you see a 1967 Cadillac? Pull up to the Fontainebleau Hotel, and a middle-aged woman, dripping in furs, bluing in her hair, very noble in bearing, get out of this Cadillac and walk into the hotel up to the desk clerk and say, in ringing, resonant, self-possessed tones, I want you to get 6 or 7 of your biggest bell hops. I want you to send them to the Cadillac parked outside the hotel. You couldn't miss it. It's fuchsia. Tell them they'll look in the back seat and they'll see my hossen. Also, you couldn't miss him. He's wearing a pea cap with a pair of Comos feather. And cradled in the arm a 6-pack metrical. Tell them they'll pick him up and they'll carry him in the hotel. You got that snip to it. So the guy sends the 7 biggest bellhops out to the Cadillac. They spot the guy. They pick him up. They carry him into the hotel. And as they're passing the desk clerk leans over and says to the woman, What's the matter, my dear? Can't he walk? She says, yes, but thanks God it doesn't have to. The Newport Jazz Festival, as you all know, is the biggest event in the annual jazz calendar. And if you read your papers some months back, you read about the riots and the chaos and the tumult at Newport. I was there, and I know what happened. The promoters went all out, you see, to produce the biggest, best event they could, but they made one small mistake. So I'm going to take you to Newport now and try to show you what that mistake was. July 4th weekend, right? Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. It is Friday night, the start of the festival. Tremendous crowd, maybe 37,000 people on hand to see, hear, and pay tribute to the top names in jazz, and the show starts off. Duke Ellington is on stage, 50 minutes, wraps it up. Tremendous. Now then, on comes the George Shearing Quintet. They completely knock the... Shearing gets a little playful, goes into his Harry Truman medley. Now the crowd is screaming, absolutely screaming. Ella Fitzgerald comes out in a bikini and wedgies. She does 115 push-ups, closes with a hernia, walks off, leaving them limp. The Quincy Jones Band comes out, Billy Bailey goes free, the Count Basie... Nat King Cole comes out and does Little Rock Getaway, and this crowd is absolutely screaming. They have never heard jazz like this before in their life. This has been the greatest night ever in the Newport Jazz Festival, when all of a sudden a hush falls over the audience, and they look up on stage, and they can't believe what they see. The next band is setting up, and the band leader turns around from his... It's got to be a dream. It can't be true. He turns around from his band, who walks up to the mic, and he says... And the one, and the two, and the three, and the four, and the... Thank you, boys. Pull it. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Harry Well, and I'm very happy to be here this evening. We have a wonderful show for you. We have Eleanor Roosevelt to sing the Limehouse Blues, and then we're going to do a medley of catchy tunes from the pen of Freddie Furtsky. Well, Freddie is generally regarded by people in the music business as being ahead of his time. Well, for example, in 1938, he wrote Remember Pearl Harbor. And then we're going to have our new champagne lady, Miss Beverly Adlin. And she will be along to sing her latest blues hit, My Mama Done Sold Me. Forget it. Everybody cuts out because they know Harry doesn't play jazz. Meanwhile, backstage in their office, the two guys that are promoting the event are in a panic, all right? All right? I told you, don't hire him. I said, look, don't, and you said, go ahead, now look what happened with Finn. Well, now, wait a second. We're not through. Maybe we can get him another booking for more money. He'll want to get off and we'll let him go. Well, yeah, but where are we going to get him another booking for more money? Well, I don't know. There's got to be a Polish wedding someplace. Call Wilkes Bar. No, never mind. That's no good. Look. We've got to make the Weld Band into a hip-swinging band, and we got less than 24 hours to do it. Now, I want you to call Hefty, call Basie, call my secretary. Tell her I get over here with a pot of coffee and a pot of pot. Tell Basie he's got to sleep with Weld tonight. He's got to sleep with him. And he's got to teach him all the hip words like crazy, cool, wild, bread, fuzz, fix. And incidentally, if you can get him to take one solid. Now, they're going to try this experiment, okay? I'm going to try this. Now, the second night of the Newport Jazz Festival, the show opens with the George Shearing. he gets such tremendous acceptance, he goes right into his Alec Templeton impression, and the crowd is screaming. He gets so excited, he walks off without his dog. Now, then on comes Ella Fitzgerald. Ella Fitzgerald comes on in a Cody Girl hat, and I want to tell her, she does a medley of Jewish folk tunes inspired by Sammy Davis Jr., and the crowd is absolutely out of their minds. When the MC comes up to the mic and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, presenting for the second night of the Newport Jazz Festival, the new Harry Weld Band." And it one, and it two, and it three, and it four, and... Worse than the night before, everybody's leaving Newport. Everybody's leaving. They don't want to stay. Now, meanwhile, in their office backstage, the promoters are in a real panic. All right. Told you, and you didn't believe me, did you? Are you kidding me? Look, I just got a call from Basie, threatens to quit the music business, go back to his old job as social director at Grossinger's. We're finished, man. Listen, you can change their clothes and you can change their arrangements, but you cannot change their thinking. Look, Wells' dressing room is right next door to the dressing room where all those musicians change, right? Now, you know those musicians. They're smoking Chesterfields, Viceroys, Winstons. They're even smoking some brown cigarettes with no brand name. You think that's Sanka in the coffee pot? Look, all we've got to do, you see, all that smoke goes up to the top of their dressing room and it's taken out of the building in an exhaust pipe. All we've got to do is switch the exhaust pipe into Wells' dressing room, and without his knowing it, we'll give it a try. I just hope it's not a waste of good smoke. Now it's the third night. Everybody has come back. They're gonna try this experiment, okay? The show opens with, are you ready for this? The show opens, what is on stage? Are you ready for this? On stage, Duke Ellington is conducting the entire Congolese Senate. They are playing Won't You Come Home, Lumumba, with a 45-minute vibe solo by Doug Hammarskjöld, and the crowd is going out of their mind. Now, the Basie band comes on stage. They go right into a medley of successful Southern boycott tunes and segue into the lunch counter stomp, and the people are screaming. Joe Williams comes up to the mic and does a Deanna Durbin medley, and people are crying. They are screaming in the aisles. All right, meanwhile, backstage in his dressing room, Harry Weld is putting on his makeup. Strike up the music. The pen has begun. The pen's been pulled. Striking. What the hell is that? Them Lemon Sisters better use a man's deodorant. Holy mackerel. Now he starts to go out on stage. Pandemonium is on stage. You don't believe the scene. In the front row is Raul Castro with a machete screaming, "I've never died!" All of a sudden, the MC walks up to the mic and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, presenting for the last night of the Newport Jazz Festival, the latest and greatest, Harry Weld Band." On December the 24th, yes, Christmas Eve, I closed at the Trade Winds in Chicago. And the reason I mention this club, the Trade Winds, is for this reason, that with the possible exception of Dario, the maitre d' here,
at the Blue Angel, the Trade Winds boasts, without a doubt, the greatest maitre d' in the business. His name is Arturo. Believe me, this man is the greatest maitre d' in the business. He knows every aspect of running a nightclub. How to get the patrons in, how to get the patrons out, how to get the liquor served, how to get the liquor out, how to get the people out of the john, the guys out of the men's john, the guys out of the ladies' john. He knows every aspect. He knows how to handle, right, okay? Now, he also knows every act, knows every line in every act, and as I say, it's, you know, you feel comfortable working in a club and knowing that your temporary fortunes are in the hands of an accomplished professional. Okay, keep this in mind. The greatest maitre d' in the business, Arturo. All right, now, I am on the bill with the Peggy DeCastro 3. They have a fellow playing drums for them. His name is Ronnie DiStefano. Saturday night, 3 shows. Finish the last show, Ronnie and I go to a place called Mammy's to do, you know, to get some coffee. Now, it gets to be 4:15 in the morning, and Ronnie DiStefano says to me, "Hey, Pat, let's go over and catch the 5 o'clock show at Holy Name, because if you go home and go to bed, you blow the whole thing." I said, "Cool." All right. So we go over and we catch the 5 o'clock service at Holy Name Cathedral, walk in the back of the cathedral, and who is standing in the back of the cathedral doing the same shtick in the cathedral that he does in the nightclub? Arturo. Got the picture? A party of 8. Yes, sir. Right this way. Won't you come right down over here? Yeah. John, a party of 8. Put them down by the statue of St. Paul. No, thank you, sir. No, I just do this on the way. Oh, Afinsky, thank you very much. That's cool, yeah. Hello, Holy Name. Never a cover, never a minimum. Yes, every hour on the hour, and a new gospel each week. Yeah. No, the 11 o'clock suspect with Fulton Sheen, Susskind package. Yeah. Fine, we'll call you back. Padre, come here. Come here, Padre. I want to talk. You know that young priest, Father Bernardino? Well, his Latin is fine, but he's not ready for a high mass. Hello, Holy Name. Hello. Smoking the last 2 pews. Yes, that's right. Well, just a minute and I'll find out. It's MCA. You want Count Basie for Lent? And we'll talk to you later. Now, Padre, come here. Come here, Padre. Now, you come on, believe me, and I know because I've been in the business, you come on and you do those long sermons. Believe me, those long sermons are very goyish. I know what I'm talking about. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to come on, do 25 minutes, 1 collection, and get off. Then you come back, close with a benediction, you've got a tight 35 minutes, you can play anywhere in the country. Oops, there's your music, you're on, Padre, give him hell. Go on, baby, go on. True story. Thank you. Buonasera. I am happy to be here this evening at the Blue Angel, and I will tell you something which you don't believe it. Today, I play golf up in Mamaroneck, Westchester. I play the wing foot, and I enjoy. They treat me nice, but I must tell you this. They think they have a difficult course, and they don't. I know because I have played all over the world. And I know which is a difficult course and which isn't. For example, I was the head pro at the Tel Aviv Golf and Country Club. Didn't hold the job too long, about a week. I was taking a shower and the club president walked in, you know. Well, you know, it's, Senora, that's prima facie evidence of the New Testament, you know. Also, I played golf at the most difficult course in the world, the Tanganyika Golf and Country Club. The Tanganyika is the most difficult. It's in Africa. It's in Africa and is built on the side of Kilimanjaro. Very difficult. The home pro, you know the home pro, Joseph Kasavubu. He's Italian. I have the course record. I shot a 71 and 6 Mau Mau. Has been better golf play. There has been, like, Sammy Snead. You know Sam Snead? He shot 67, but just 1 Mau Mau. And he couldn't miss, was his carry. Now, the reason this is such a difficult course is because it has some of the most difficult holes in the world. For example, the 15th hole. 15th hole? 5-part hole, and is extremely difficult hole. You know why? Because you can't find the green. The green is located in the secret burial ground of the elephants, and you can't find the green. The only way to play this hole is to shoot an elephant and follow him. Sometimes you can't find an elephant, you gotta shoot a giraffe and tell him to lie about his weight. The most difficult hole of all on the course, beyond the question of no shadow of any doubt, the most difficult hole of all is the 18th hole. It's a three-part. 215, 205. It's a two iron for me. The reason is so difficult is because you gotta shoot over a pygmy village. Do you know the pygmies? You gotta shoot over a pygmy village. And if you are short, and those little sons of guns, they don't miss. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pat Harrington, Jr., and I am very happy to be here at the Blue Angel. Thank you. Thank you.